How are you doing? And you're very welcome along to the football pod with Paddy Andrews, James O'Donoghue and Tommy Rooney. The National Football Finals weekend has just passed us by. We're moving into Championship, but let's linger on what we've just witnessed this weekend, because there's been some really, really good stuff.
I think we should go straight to the Championship, because there's some really exciting... That Ulster Championship is going to be very good, and Leinster is up in the air.
That is true. Just put a capstone on it. Like, forget about the league, Jimmy.
I have big questions now about the Munster Championship too, after what we witnessed at the weekend, but we'll come back to that in a couple of minutes. Paddy Andrews, how are you?
Good, lads, yeah.
Good. Good to have you here this Monday. James O'Donoghue.
I had a great weekend. Great weekend, yeah.
Class.
I'm not giving any more information than that.
bit of R&R. The rest of
a bit of an old crew of Dublin lads. Yeah, we went over to Lisbon there to just very great city, like beautiful culture, all that good stuff. So sunburned
museums over there.
Lovely museums. I have no voice, and it's
churches,
just great to be here
to visit the churches.
Really, really good, Jimmy. Really good. Highly recommend it. I'll send you on a list, a to-do list for Lisbon.
Gorgeous spot.
How was the golf game over there?
We were struggling, coordination was not our strong point by Saturday afternoon playing around the golf. It was more go-karting than golf, to be honest, but a couple of birdies in there, yeah.
Take that.
That'll keep you going.
Yeah, not bad.
James, yeah. James, you're trying to actively avoid Sunday afternoon. We'll get to Sunday in a second. I was in Croke Park all weekend. The Division 3 and 4 finals were on Saturday. Carlow and Longford played out a bit of a thriller, and Jonathan Higgins was covering the game for us and off the ball beside me. And he said, it's like the Walking Dead out there in extra time. Fellas falling all over the place, cramping. I thought there was one genius moment from the man of the match, Conor Doyle from Carlow, where it looks like he's winding up to take a one-point effort, which wouldn't have been recommended, given how late it was. He's about 40-odd yards out. And then he just winds down and plays this beautiful little punch pass into the wing-back, Padraig Bulger, and he points in the second half of extra time. Longford had a red card, which probably led to them falling short in that second half extra time. They never actually led in that game. Carlow were ahead the whole time and got the job done eventually. So we might come back to that one a little later on, because Joe Murphy was very interested in talking after the game. And then a little later, Down were possibly lucky to get over the line against a Wexford side that really went for the throat. And Wexford totally dominated the second half, but just couldn't take their chances. Down winning an extra time. This is a massive game in terms of securing their Sam Maguire spot. Not 40% certain yet. Mm. I was looking at some of the GA accounts of the weekend, crunching the numbers, and they reckon it's about a 60% sure deal that Down are going to qualify. There's a couple of sequences. If a Division 3 or 4 team gets the provincial final, Down will not make it into the Sam Maguire. So they'll be hoping that it goes
unless they get into a provincial, unless they get to the Ulster final.
They've only got it first.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which brings us on to Sunday. Now, I sat there on
Finally.
I sat there on Sunday in Croke Park, and just before both games threw in, and I said, do you know what? I think we're going to witness the 2026 All-Ireland champions here today. I just wasn't sure which final they were coming from. And then Donegal did what they did, and I was like, oh, no,
you
that's
think
it.
Cork are that good?
That's it. That's it. That's it. That's it. That's it.
You had that joke you prepared for literally 1 week.
And it flopped.
The highest of high horses there. The Royals win a first league title in nearly 20 years, and he's on the high horse again.
No.
It was a disappointing final, though, wasn't it? Like, same as last year's All-Ireland final. It was like, just roles reversed. Donegal were awesome. Kerry just, I don't know, seen Jack O'Connor's comments after, just couldn't get to the pitch of it. Just so unlike them. But not a great game, really. Again, because they've got the two best teams, clearly, you feel, particularly over the course of the season, and you feel like they're the two front runners for the All-Ireland, but just Donegal blew them away.
Yeah. Like, I think Donegal have gained an awful lot from that game, if I'm being honest. I know that even the narrative around the place is Eric Kerry, you know, we're missing a lot, and you can probably come up with 50 excuses, and we will come up with 50 excuses, Gary, no problem for you.
So go. Start now, Jimmy.
No, in fairness to Donegal, like every problem that came up from the All-Ireland final in 25, they fixed. Mm. They looked hungry for it, strong, physical. They looked that they'd bought in. And even after, what I thought was interesting was after the game, obviously the celebrations were muted because nobody wants to give an inch in that situation. You don't want to be running around, jumping up, hugging, high-fiving after winning the league because it looks soft to the opposition. But I guarantee when they got back into the dressing room, they were buzzing because that was a big, big day for them. They were under a lot of pressure. Jim McGuinness was under a lot of pressure to deliver a result and actually beat Kerry and Croke Park, and he did. And I think the Kerry can bounce back fine. And they have loads to learn from it. But Donegal, that'll be a big thing on their journey, a big win. And it looked, even from the game in Ballyshannon, I remember saying on this pod, that could have really got away from Kerry as well. Donegal left Kerry off the hook in Ballyshannon. So they didn't this time. It went out to 21 points. Fair enough, Kerry got it back, but...
Jack said it was a Seanie O'Shea one-man show to stop it being like that in Ballyshannon. James, you mentioned Donegal putting right things that went wrong in the All-Ireland final.
Yeah.
What's the first thing they put right?
Well, look, the game, there's two things that were standout, but the game came down to the kickouts. Like, we can say anything. We always say that it comes down to your conversion rate. Or you're only as good as your conversion rate. But as a player, you're only as good as the possession that you're going to get. Like, if you don't have the ball, you're useless. The Kerry forwards were starved of it. I think Donegal won. Did they win 8 in a row or something off Kerry's kick?
Seven in a row. Where they got 10 points without response.
Like, the momentum that if you're down the other side of the field as a forward and you're just watching the game, it's so hard. You're getting cold. You're getting worried. You're in your head. The ball just not coming down. And, like, there's a lot to go into a kickout. It's not just Shane Murphy and, you know, fellas making runs. Like, the way that Donegal set up was very clever. But you're looking out at monsters out there. And Kerry just couldn't match him physically or in the air. Mark O'Shea caught a few. He tried hard, I thought, early. But, I mean, Donegal, under the breaks and in the air, were magnificent.
But doesn't it put more pressure on the forwards? Sorry to kind of go on it.
Just on that, because it was really interesting looking at it, right? And maybe you're getting to this point yourself, but from last year's All-Ireland final, and personnel aside from both counties, right? Yeah, there's players missing, but you're always going to have players missing. The way that Donegal set up, okay, the wall of 6 foot units, right, is one thing. Out around the middle third, so you've got McGee, you've got McFadden, you've got Langan, you've got Murphy, you've got McGonagall, right? That's one thing, right? But Kerry couldn't get out. And last year, they got so many mismatches in their full back line.
Yeah.
This time, it was Shane O'Donnell, Conor O'Donnell, Pater Mogan, Shea Malone. They were the boys that were the pressing. And they're fast, they're nimble, they're athletic. And they were obviously blocking off the channel. Because Shane Murphy couldn't go short. He had no options to go short.
But Tommy, if you look at Conor O'Donnell's goal, okay, and do you remember you did that great video online with the...
I was looking at his boots, to be honest with you.
But after he scores that goal, right, watch his reaction.
Sprint.
All he's thinking about is the kickout. Because they have been hammered into them at training. I don't care what you do. You score a point, you score a goal, you kick it wide. You sprint back into your position and everyone is shouting, kick out, who have you got? And that's a mindset that is so important, so crucial. And they were absolutely on it. It happened a couple of times. Lion kicks an unbelievable two-pointer and the camera pans to him. And any other fella would be chest out looking around and they're looking for his family in the crowd and giving them a wave. Langan is pointing fellas into position for kickoff. So they were so tuned into that. And you're dead right, that was actually a massive factor.
McHugh was in that press as well.
But wasn't it like just an intensity, and they were so diligent, Donegal? We said they're at their best, they're like this, they've their long bouts of possession, they're waiting for opposition to switch off. But even, say, the first quarter of the game, when it's still a bit of a match at the time, and Kerry have a little bit of possession, but Donegal are so switched on. Kerry trying to find gaps, try and get Clifford onto it. Donegal had their matchups right, their tackle intensity. And then we get to the Murphy incident as well. It was just, without a doubt, it was like Donegal had to settle a score nearly in their own heads with how bad the All-Ireland final went for them last year. Because last year, in that game in July, Kerry got a fast start. Okay, Donegal got a couple of injuries to Thompson and McHugh, but they never got to the pitch of it. And Donegal, if they're not at that intense level with the runners off the shoulder, if not switched on defensively, they can be made to look ordinary. But yesterday, you saw the best version of them. Yes, the kickouts was one part of it. How they use the ball, their efficiencies, their matchups, which was a key point as well in terms of shutting down that Kerry attack. But just from the first whistle, they did not give Kerry an inch. And Kerry on the other side were just flat. Like you've seen, to your point earlier, Jimmy, forwards are starved of possession. All of a sudden, when they did get possession, they were snatching at things. Even Clifford, like, dropping balls short. Stuff you never see. But that comes with, I haven't touched the ball in 15 minutes here. And this game is getting away from me. So when you get the possession, now you're trying to force something. And yes, Kerry's conversion rate was down, but Donegal just controlled that entire aspect. It was an outstanding performance from them. And it was just the sense of, as you said, here's everything that went wrong, you know, 7 or 8 months ago in July. And yeah, there's personnel and all that stuff that have changed, but we're going to go out here and deliver a performance. And if they can consistently get to that level, and they have done that for so much of their games last season, that's why the All-Ireland final was such an anomaly for Donegal, that they just got nowhere near that. It was an ominous performance. Kerry will be better than that. Obviously, that's bad day at the office. But for Donegal, every aspect of their game yesterday was just perfect. Absolutely perfect. Mm. From 1 to 15, guys they brought in switched on for the full 70 minutes. And it was spectacular stuff, to be fair to them.
James, 100%. Looking at the trends in the leagues, and just, I was looking at a bit of data during the week, and I can only tell you one part of it, but one of the jump-out trends is that Kerry are getting significantly less shots than most of the other Division 1 teams. Now, they end up in the league final, right? But because of the quality of their conversion, right? So the two-pointers are scoring, the amount of goals they're getting, the freakish accuracy numbers they're hitting, they're getting away with it in one sense. But if they're not, like, the average of not getting enough possession, like, as you said earlier on, like, Donegal could move very, very, very obviously early on. Brendan McCall was taking Dylan Gainey, and this was hinted at in the pod last week.
Yeah.
They put Caelan McColgan on David Clifford, and it looked like they were shutting down Kerry's other two forwards other than David Clifford. They were putting more of a focus on that and starving of the ball. So
I think they just took McCall off Clifford because they had to try something different. I don't think it was necessarily put McCall on Gainey, because I think that decision was about Clifford. Do you not think?
I'm not sure. I'm trying to figure out the way that they were thinking about it. Like, looking at Donegal from the outside, all plans that they had yesterday, the reverse of the All-Ireland Final, they worked yesterday, what they had.
They did. But going back to the All-Ireland Final, they marked Clifford and they did the zonal defence around the arc, around the D, and tried to do a zonal defence. Okay?
But it might have been a noticeable yesterday, James, but they did the same thing yesterday, except they cheated off a Kerry player inside in the 21. Gavin Mulroney ended up marking a Kerry man.
Yeah, but there's enough heat on the ball outside. You can't even begin to look in and see who's being marked by who inside. Mm. That was clever, I must say, but if there's enough heat in the ball, it's hard to get the ball in anyway. But they were still very tight. Every time Kerry got the ball around the arc, they were outing them. Last year, they left Kerry have the ball on Paddy Clifford's boot for minutes at a time. There was nobody in his face, or he was just soloing the ball. This year, they pushed out and they really aggressively defended the arc. And it came to pass in the first play when Clifford has a two-point shot. And
drop short.
He kicks it up in the air. And that was actually kind of an important moment, because Donegal had definitely spoken about stopping those two-point shots. I think Kerry only got one two-pointer in the whole game.
Paul Gainey.
Yeah. But again, Gainey comes on and gets a great one. Whereas last year, it was such a factor for Kerry. So they did go better man for man on everyone, Tom.
Yeah, and I suppose that aggression that you mentioned, right? I'm not sure if it was visible on the TV cameras before the game, but before the ball is thrown in, Caelan McGonagall and Joe O'Connor are poking each other. They are battering each other just beneath us in the Hogan stand for about 30 seconds, like, and it's going on. Like, Donegal did set the tone from the get-go. Like, and I'm going to hark back to last year's qualifier or round-robin defeat to Meath. Meath needed to win that game more than Kerry that day. Maybe Kerry weren't at it fully. This is what we were getting at in the pod last year, I was getting at. And you can be made look very, very ordinary in this new game if mentally, if physically, you're not fully tuned in. And like Jack O'Connor said on Thursday night, after the Armagh game the week before, he knew on Thursday they weren't going to be ready to go on Sunday. Like, you're in big trouble if you're not right in this new game.
You are. But like, if you look at the and again, this could be seen as an excuse, but if you look at the mentality of both teams, Donegal are looking for that little element of revenge after the All-Ireland final. No, it's not. Them winning that does not satisfy them at all, by the way. Like, there's no way they're going to take that much pleasure out of it. They would have got back in the dressing room and been delighted, but that's not enough. They need to win Sam Maguire to settle that inside in their gut. But like they were coming at that raging for it, whereas Kerry were going up kind of limp. Now I know you can kind of say the Armagh game would have taken a lot out of them, but it just even mentally, Donegal needed to win that game, and that's why I was so impressed with them. They came and they delivered like majorly early on. They set the tone up front. They do what they always do. They were unbelievably efficient. Langan drove it on, obviously scoring the first 5 points. But then they kept the foot in the gas for as long as they could and squeezed the kick out. And it was a brilliant Donegal performance.
But Jimmy, it does put them as
nearly top of the pops at the moment, top of the pile.
So you should say that.
Not to oversimplify it. Look, Langan is a perfect example nearly of the difference between... And you can't reference this game without looking back at the All-Ireland final. Like Michael Langan's one of the... in the run for player of the year going into last year's All-Ireland final. He's a good final. Donegal win. He's probably in the mix to win player of the year. He has a bad final. He's not alone in that, but just is not at the races. And that was the tone of Donegal. Outside of Michael Murphy, really, in last year's All-Ireland final, who actually got anywhere near their peak level. And then Donegal came in yesterday. All their key players performed. All the guys we've been talking about over the last 7 or 8 weeks. Conor O'Donnell, exceptional again. Murphy, going through the gears, getting back to what he does best. And Langan was the epitome of this. When he's good, he is one of the best there is. And he gets man of the match yesterday. And on the other side, look at Kerry. Kerry had a performance like Donegal in the final last year. Just not the sharpness, not the slickness, not the cohesion that we normally see from Kerry. I don't think it's the worst thing for them. I think Jack O'Connor doesn't need to give a lot of feedback to those players. They're an experienced team. They will look at that game themselves and just know that is not at the level we're at, whether it's from kickouts, whether it's that intensity, individual battles. And Kerry's still absolutely right there in terms of the All-Ireland. But it was a sobering defeat for them. But like I said, I agree with you, Jimmy. I think Donegal probably needed a victory there a little bit more than Kerry. And it just gives them another boost going in. And remember, lads, outside of the final last year, they've only got back-to-back Ulster champions. They were outstanding all through this league campaign. They were the same last spring as well. 99% of their games, they've been outstanding, bar the final last year. So it's nothing new what we see from yesterday, but it was just important to deliver against really their key rivals. Outside of these two teams there, it's a massive ask for other teams, I think, to knock off one of these two in the championship.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
The upside for Kerry is they're going to go into a Munster championship realistically with one game against Cork in the Munster final in Killarney, whereas Donegal are going to go in now to a battering and bruising. I know the standard of Ulster has dropped realistically. It's Armagh and it's Donegal. But it's still a battering and a bruising championship. But if you look at what the two sides, how they can develop over the summer, like Donegal were still missing Patton, Oisin Gallant, Darrow Boyle, Rorty was sub, Thompson. I think I might be missing one or two there as well, Tommy.
Yeah.
Kerry, on Kerry's side, missing their half-back line in Brian Begley and Gavin White, Sean O'Brien, Dermot O'Connor, Paddy Clifford, Shane Ryan. So these teams can really evolve and change again. We're going to obviously assess the game based on what it was, but going into the summer, both teams can improve so much. And even the level of preparation you do for a league final is minimal. Tactically, it's minimal. It's about
a week. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not really doing that much preparation. It's just kind of go out there and kind of see how it goes. Now, Donegal took it to a new level this year, but every championship game is going to be so tactical this year because we see how much the kickoff can affect the game.
You may have missed Kieran Moore. I don't know if you mentioned Kieran Moore.
Kieran Moore, yes. The main one nearly. The Kieran Moore.
So important. And just to mention, Rorty didn't start. He played 20s during the week. And Rorty comes on. He did the warm-up. I just think he was maybe a little off. But young Max Campbell comes in and scores 3 points.
What a performance.
Final kid. Class to see. Great to see that in our league final. A fella coming in like that. Keith Evans scores a goal for Kerry. So it's 1-1. It was a strange kind of first 15 minutes of the game. 1-1 to 3 points. After 13 minutes. Then Michael Langan kicks his fifth so far for Donegal, a two-pointer. And then there's a really key moment here midway through the first half. And, you know, Jack O'Connor was asked about it afterwards. Jim McGuinness was asked about it afterwards. He says he didn't see it. he says he would get a chance to see it later on the season as well. But Michael Murphy comes in with a couple of close-fist tackles. Well, you could call them tackles on Dylan Casey that is somehow missed. Because the only thing you could say is that it is missed by the officials, because David Goff walks across the pitch and yellow cards him, and he makes a punching gesture or a closed fist tackle gesture to him. So clearly he was told something, David Goff, by the linesman Connor Lane, but I don't know, the replays aren't great.
No, I don't want to make too much of it, but it's stonewall red card. It's even a level above a red card for me. He's gone in, he's punched him. He first tries to nail him with a shoulder, but gets him kind of in the side of the head. He hits him two punches into the ribs, and then he gets him, honestly, a boxer would be proud of the third punch he hits him into the jaw. Straight arm, the ball was gone for a second or two, and he hits him into the chin.
I think he got him in the throat.
I thought that he, like, Dylan had to go off.
Mm.
Like, it was stonewall right there. Now, I'm at the same time, for the game, obviously, I'm not saying, oh, Gary should have had an advantage for the whole game. I couldn't care less about that. But that was a really bad incident, in my opinion. Look, why he wasn't sent off, I don't know. Did Connor Lane miss it? But Goff, if Goff had seen it, he probably would have sent him off. But like, it's actually a level above a red card. It was a shocking tackle for me.
Yeah, it wasn't good. And moments later, he kicks a 2-point free and scores 1-5 and has such a big influence on the kicker. But I think you're right, James. I don't think you're giving out about the actual league final. I think it's more the principle of the
surprising thing, Tommy, is
that Michael Murphy has a habit of doing, I think.
But for Connor Lane, look, you don't want to be giving out about officials, but if it's on the sideline, it's literally a couple of feet from him. And it's, even in real time on TV, you can kind of see going, Jesus, that looks a bit much there. Like, and then you see the replay and it's a red card. There's absolutely no way around it. Murphy will know that himself. And I would have assumed when David Goff was walking over to him that he was going to be sent off. So I seen Goff doing that gesture, Tommy, which I can only think Connor Lane has kind of missed. Maybe the last one was the bad one into the throat. And just said, oh, he's attempting to make a tackle there with a closed fist.
Mm.
And that's why Goff has only given him a yellow card. I don't know what happens retrospectively on this. Incredible. But
I don't think
that was universally, that was a red card. There's no ambiguity there. There's no debate. It just shouldn't have happened.
Yeah,
I suppose if that's a championship match, I think there's a pile on or a pile in. Do you know, like, everyone, I don't know, did everyone miss it or was it just because the intensity wasn't there. But like for to just be to go ahead and unseen with such an assault on a fella, I thought it was surprising. But like Kerry, I think it was Kieran Whelan said on League Sunday that he's put a little bit of a target on his back with referees. I think that's actually a very good point. You know, if something that high profile kind of happens, you're going to be, if anything doubtful happens throughout the summer, I think he'll be sent off. He's put himself in the window for referees now after that, I think.
We'll see what transpires. I do think that because he got a yellow card, there won't be any following or any retrospective action on that one. And he did go on to have a huge influence on proceedings.
He was outstanding. Like, if you look at the fellas who came out of the game, say, performance-wise, strictly football, Murphy was outstanding.
Like,
the goal he gets to even... I just love the fact when he was going through on goals, and was it McFadden running with him? He said, get back. I'm going to smash this into the corner. And it was an absolutely brilliant finish. Like, if he could have easily soloed it in close to Shane Murphy, slipped it across for a Pam in. Maybe he would have done it in a championship match, but the finish was outstanding. So I thought, there was question marks about him. He hasn't played much in that league. Is he going to get up for it again another year? And he proved that he has more than enough in the tank.
And whatever about the manner in which the All-Ireland final went from last year, the role that he played this time at around the middle third absolutely sits him down to the ground when it came to kickouts and stuff. Just the Conor O'Donnell goal, the accidental player cam view that I got trying to get a shot of his green boots in the sun. You'd actually learn a lot looking at that angle. Like, Joe Connor gets annoyed, I think, with all the Kerry or the Donegal possession and shoots up out of the line Murphy does a kind of a dummy looking for a pass and doesn't get it. Langan then comes in. The way O'Donnell times his run, James, like there's a bit of genius that went into that goal.
Yeah, all those points. I think they held the ball for 2 or 3 minutes, wasn't it? Like, and you're right that Joe gets frustrated. It's watching team have possession is just demoralizing, and you kind of end up running out and maybe making a poor decision. But if you look at, it's Jason Foley just picking Conor O'Donnell in that situation. And Jason has him. And Clifford does this as well. You think you have him until he explodes off the mark. And you go from having him to being nowhere near him. Like, it is from that standing start to be able to just explode off.
Acceleration is exceptional.
The acceleration is unbelievable. And then actually in commentary, who was commentating on League Sunday? I forget his name. He said that Shane Murphy should have saved it.
It was an absolute rocket.
No, I think it was Darren Maloney.
Wasn't Darren?
It was a rocket. Unsavable. A brilliant finish into the corner. He gets a little bit of a fingertip tip, but he was lucky to get that.
I thought it went right into the top corner, to be honest. But some goal.
It was a brilliant goal. And by a brilliant player who's had a great league.
Is he player of the league? Your top ten forwards got a lot of airtime last week. They did, James.
We gotta send this. Okay.
Well, I never knew that Roscommon had the 6 best forwards in the country, 1-6.
Remember we did this 8 years ago.
What was it? Dreadful.
Cavan. We were barred from Cavan. Remember we did a Talta Cup selection a couple of years ago and the whole Cavan was coming for us as well. Leaving out Cavan was spicy.
We're in trouble. Leaving out Murtha was questionable. But
I was
you did go
limited
for Craig.
To one per team, like
apart from Kerry.
Apart from Kerry, well,
yeah, he did have the 6 Kerry forwards in, but other than that, like, a couple of Kerry subs as well. Like,
I think we should make this a rolling feature across the season, and we will ask you every couple of weeks: has anyone broken into your top 10 forwards on form? Okay.
Well, you see,
this is just a new iteration of your power rankings, Tommy. Like,
yeah, exactly.
On form, it could be one championship game, like, you know, so you could easily get in there.
Exactly. So look,
Like Division 2, the weighting isn't as heavy as Division 1. That's why Finnerty, Conor O'Donnell, these fellas are delivering Craig. Week in, week out in Division 1.
Murtha?
You can't get away with the Murtha one.
I like Derek Craig a lot. I think he has lots of attributes. And he was brilliant in Clarny against Kerry and Jason Foley as well.
Yeah. And there was grumblings about Enda Smith too. I think maybe you're looking at Enda Smith as a slightly different type of forward rather than a...
Yeah. Enda Smith, like in the Langan category, kind of a midfielder.
Wing forward, half
wing forward. Push up, I was thinking more. Again, yeah,
does it all.
A little bit of a conversation start.
Yeah, we'll get back to it.
Fair play, Jimmy, fair play.
Boys, we're going to take a quick break in the football pod and we're coming back with the feature game from Sunday, which was me winning.
Royals. The Royals are back.
Back in a minute. You're welcome back to the Football Pod with Paddy Anders and James O'Donoghue. We've talked about Donegal's very impressive dismantling of the All-Ireland champions Kerry in the Division 1 League Final. Now to move on to the feature game, and it's the news that none of you wanted to hear. It's Mead winning a trophy in Croke Park. It's all beautiful Mead playing out. I'm only joking. Let's not get too carried away.
Well, to be fair, it is your home venue, so you won a home game.
It's funny. Yeah, and Mead have kind of admitted it. Yeah, it feels like we're getting used to it now.
It's not that big an advantage, lads.
After all the games that the Dubs played there.
Monumental.
Sorry, what was that? Excuse me?
And Micheál Cronin, the Cork selector, said beforehand, we are playing the home team here. Like, so, Mead, the one thing I'd say, though, Paddy, about that is, you know, I've witnessed Mead lose games in Croke Park and looked at the fellas out there and thought possibly they were maybe a bit spooked or a bit thrown or over the years. And now I'm listening to Owen Frayne afterwards, like, break down the actual wind in Croke Park. Better than anyone I've ever done it before, that is coming at you like a bit of a V going into the hill. And Jack O'Connor has clearly clocked a 2, because anytime he gets to the right-hand side of the post shooting into the hill, he is going for a 2-pointer no matter what. He kicked 4 from the same patch against Tyrone and won the last day as well. There is this comfort thing with Croke Park and this muscle memory as well. So it probably is a powerful thing for Mead to win there at the weekend.
Just the next stage in their development, isn't it? The to win that trophy, to see for Robbie Brennan again. We've spoken a lot about him and the tone he kind of sets around the Meath team. They were pipped down there a couple of weeks ago. Like I say, no one, I didn't have these two teams getting promoted from this division. I would have thought Tyrone, we spoke about at length, that they were a favourite. But for Meath and Cork, it was a big deal for both of them to get promoted. And then yesterday was just, I agree, just another, just confirmation that we're on the right track here. To get playing against two really competitive teams. They're not going to see each other till maybe an All-Ireland series in maybe 8 weeks or 10 weeks' time. But just to pick up a trophy there, and Meath, they've had this habit in nearly all of their games, Tom. You've been at nearly every one of their games. When they get hot, like, they make a count. You know, they have these periods where they're one of the best users of the two-point rule across all four divisions. They have boys that can take serious advantage of that. And Robbie Brennan talking about the boys are going to Coppers for the week afterwards. Just, again, the reaction of the players after. We said it, even the first weekend, like, to be Cavan, last-minute point, and they're high-fiving each other. Just a buzz around that team. And yesterday was just another tick in that box. And they go into the Leinster Championship now. Like, that's the next thing for them. Can we win the Provincial Championship? Yes, playing in Croke Park over the spring has definitely been a help for them around that. But there's a confidence across that team. I can't wait to see them in it. Maybe against Dublin in the Leinster Championship or Loud. What those teams and where they're at. It's fascinating for the first time in so long. But it's just as a neutral, it is great to see, I have to say. So they're exciting to watch. They are one of the best teams to watch.
Exciting to watch. They're savvy too. We'll get back to the end game in a minute because that's a big talking point. But James, these two did go toe-to-toe with each other. You know, mm-hmm. Paddy mentioned Cork beating Meath and Porky Rinn. They've progressed their game as well. What do you think the difference was? Because, like, Sherlock and Jones, right, score 111 between them. Okay, Brian Hurley comes on and scores a goal. Chris O'Jones could have had a hat-trick. He was very unlucky. You know, yeah. he had three big goal chances. Took his goal in the end beautifully. Sherlock was on fire, caused Seamus Lavin all sorts of bother. Ronan Ryan comes on and does a good job on him in the last kind of 20 minutes or so. But, you know, around midfield, there was times when Cork were on top, Meath were on top. What was the difference out there?
I think that at the moment, Meath are probably a better team than Cork at the moment. But I think the Cork are getting there 100%. I was surprised when Cork beat Meath in... Was it Parky Rinn or Parky Creeve they beat them in? Down in Cork, anyway. I was surprised that they beat them. But, like, Cork left the game after them, in my opinion, this time. And, like, if you think about the power of the goals, when Meath get that beautiful goal through O'Connor...
Mm.
It just gives them that emphasis to go on and win the game. Well, Cork had that chance twice in the first half through Chris O'Jones, who, you know, I'm a huge fan of him. I think he's a brilliant player. Unbelievably creating goal chances. But the two ones he missed, he'd be disappointed with. He should have come out there with a hat-trick. That's how elusive and how dangerous he is and, you know, how he creates chances. So they left a couple of goals thereafter.
The first chance... To be harsh on him, I don't think he connects as well as he wanted, and it just goes by the post. But the second goal chance, does Ian Maguire do him any favours? He kind of gives him the ball a bit too early, does he?
The second one, well...
The hand passing along the end line, you know?
I think he's such a good finisher that when he did get the angle, he just miscalculated it and hooked it too far wide. The third chance then, he took it brilliantly with a little dummy. Questioned the goalkeeping a little bit, but he finishes it beautifully. When it comes to Sherlock, then Sherlock had an unbelievable day out in front of the post. I think what happened with the way they were defending him was Cork run a lot of ball in, and they were getting into certain areas where the Meath defenders wanted to collapse onto the ball and just strangle it and turn them over. And Sherlock was just hanging out there, outside, a hand pass away, just little hand up, give it to me, lads. And every time he tidied up every attack by just caressing it over beautifully. Mm. The array of kicking was so impressive. Like those two players, Sherlock and Jones, they're two really, really solid operators, to be fair to them. And
Paul Walsh.
O'Callaghan as well in midfield, I think, is a super player.
Colin O'Callaghan and Paul Walsh kicked a pair of points each. I've mentioned Brian Hurley comes off the bench and gets a goal. perhaps they didn't get enough maybe out of Mark Cronin, who's been, you know, very good throughout the league. Dara Shidi, who's kind of emerged as well. Again, you're not going to have all six forwards flying on one day, but they do have serious threats there. Sherlock had one wide, James. I'm not sure if you noticed it, but I thought it was a sign of where his head was at. Oh, sorry, you had two wides, right? But the other wide was in the first half, and it was a two-point effort where he gets it, spins, and throws it over his shoulder out looking from the two-point arc, and it kind of just trails wide, but it was like, oh, God. Yeah. Does he feel that good about himself? Is he just going for that?
No, he was right. He was feeling that good. And
it was his first shot of the game.
Yeah, no, he was on it. I'd say he likes the goals in Croke Park, but...
Yeah.
I agree. I think that I said last week, Cork are very reliant on their very, very good players. Like, they're probably short one or two to kick on to the next level, but I'll tell you what, they are getting there. They are getting there. Cork are looking now like an outfit where they have the stomach for it. They have the gut for it. They have some very good forwards. They also have a couple of excellent tight defenders and a strong midfield. Like, they'll be very hard to beat. And if it does come to Kerry Cork in the muster final in Killarney, it's going to be getting back to what it was, which I think Cork needed that fixture. So I don't think Cork could be overly disappointed with losing that final. They're back up to Division One. Like, that's a great result for them from the league.
Genuinely, what do we think the ceiling is for both of these teams? Like last year's Division Two final, the Rossies get the better of Monaghan. Neither team had a great championship after that. There seems like there's maybe a bit more of a buzz around both of these teams coming back up. Obviously, the tradition there, but where can Cork and Meath get to? Who do you think is better out of the two of them?
I think the Meath are better at the moment. Well, I think the both teams are there to stay. I think they're
All
both on the,
semi-finals.
On the right
could
side.
Could either of these
the
make a semi-final?
Well, there's definitely a big, big result in Meath in Croke Park. Like, if they play with that enthusiasm, that pace, that youthful exuberance, the way they can get those two-pointers, the way they can take their goal chances, the way that Robbie Brennan has them all feeling good. Even his interview after the game was so jovial, and I just think you'd love to be part of that camp at the moment. He just has it. He has it down. So I think there's definitely a big result in them. And then Cork, like, Cork are in Munster. They're going to get to the...
That's
to
the kick in the arse for Cork, isn't it? Because I know you're saying, Jimmy, that they'll give Kerry a good game, and they always do. Even when they weren't at the best over the last number of years, they can put it up to Kerry. I still think Kerry are going to win the Munster Championship. I think Meath can win the Leinster Championship and maybe gives them a slightly easier seeding, whatever, going into the All-Ireland Series. And you're right, Meath beat, obviously, Dublin, Kerry, and they beat Galway in the quarterfinal last year. So they've no fear of that. I'd have Meath a little bit ahead of Cork. I honestly think there's, I agree with you, I think there's something special with me. There is I could see them having a big summer.
We'll be catching up in McCormick's and Trim.
Mate, yeah, we're down
in a couple
few
of weeks.
Time.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to that, and we'll be looking at the Leinster Championship and teasing all this out with a couple of Meath supporters, I'm sure that even. But just to mention, you're asking where they can go. Like, Paddy, it is steps on the ladder. Like,
yeah,
a Division 2 title is no good to me. Okay, promotion is very important, but a Division 2 title is no good to me if they don't back it up now. And this Leinster Championship, I don't know what way the bookies are looking at it, but like Loud are 5.5 to 1. The Dubs are still favourites. Perhaps it's because Loud and Dublin are set to meet in a Leinster semi-final, and Meath are just behind them there. But this Leinster Championship is going to be very competitive. It's going to be
within their camp. The expectation is to win the Leinster Championship.
Yeah.
Whether they come out and say that publicly, I don't know. But without a doubt, within their camp, they let themselves down the last quarter last year to not win that Leinster Championship and close it out against Loud. I have no doubt that they are running for that title this year.
Yeah. James, there was a bit of aggression in this game. I thought Cork set the tone really well. Robbie Brennan said afterwards, I was interested to hear this. We were surprised at how ready to rock Cork were. We actually anticipated them being a little off after having to go to the well against Tyrone and having championship in 2 weeks. So it was kind of funny that maybe Cork set the tone in this game and me kind of expected them to be a little bit off. It's maybe funny that they'd admit it.
Again, mentally, like the Division 1 final, I think Meath were in a position to go at this a bit better. They probably knew they were going to be in the league final. a week before, whereas Cork had to go to Cork came home from their training camp, had to beat Kildare, and then had to go up to Tyrone and get a result, which they did. The high of that, I'm sure they probably celebrated it, enjoyed it, and then have to go again. It probably was a little bit of a step too far. And we actually saw it in the second half. They had a spell where they were up to nothing for 10 minutes. It's like they were spent. And me, like, I'd say the game was played at a very high intensity, but when they brought on the subs, Conlon comes on and has a day of days for...
He's the match winner.
For half an hour.
He's the match winner.
Absolutely outstanding. Now, Hurley comes on and does excellently for Cork as well. And even his finish, his left foot finish was beautiful. Because he gets that pass off Chris O'Jones. It's a good pass, but still a little high. So he has to grab it high and then reset himself down. And any other fella would just put that straight onto the boot and lash it. But he just opens the body and does a lovely little near post finish away from the keeper. But Conlon, I thought, was excellent. So available all the time for the ball. And every time he got a chance to pull the trigger, he slotted it.
I was chatting to Mickey Newman briefly in the press box. Mickey was such a savage forward for Meath across the 2010s. And he was talking about James Conlon when he first broke through, and that he destroyed fellas in training. He ripped everyone asunder. And what was happening was he was just getting crowded out in county games. And I think over the last year or two, the rule change is one thing, but he's put on a little bit of size, or maybe he's just developed a bit of physicality, a bit of explosiveness. But Anthony Moyles messaged me last night as well about it. Conlon made a massive contribution by intelligently using the ball every time he got it. James has learned that to be a top corner forward, it's not always about speed or taking your man on. He has matured in his game massively. Like, I think that's such a dangerous asset to have. A fella like that, James, would you like him coming in with 20 minutes to go? How jinky he is, how he can maneuver opportunities and so nimble.
I actually was thinking, but I'd rather have him for that period, because he has the cheek as well, or the, I don't know, he just looks like he has the confidence in him to come on. He could be sitting on the bench there, right? And the game could be in the melting pot. And a lot of fellas are going, Jesus, this is tight. Whereas I think he's thinking, I can do damage here. I think he has that personality. From just seeing him and from when the camera pans him and from seeing him live in Quebec, I think he has that kind of, that mindset. But yeah, to be fair, every time he got the ball yesterday, he put it over the bar. Like he wasn't making, you know, ridiculous decisions or anything. He was getting it. He was eyeing his man up. He was making space and he was slotting it. Like, that's the job of a corner forward. And he had it done to a
T. He scored 4 points. He actually scored five, but Meade were playing on an advantage and the word came in from the line to cut out the point and go back and take a 2-point free from 50-odd yards, which was a bit nuts at the time. But look, they can move on from it. They got the job done. So Meade, Division 2 champions. The last part of the pod here, because I asked our listeners to the pod on Instagram, had they any questions? A lot of questions about Michael Murphy, a lot of questions about the Hooter, an awful lot of comments about the Hooter. And the Hooter had an impact on three games this weekend, three very different ways. Let's just start with the Meath Cork one. Meath are 2 points up and they get a free. There's 30 seconds left. I was sitting beside Shane McIntyre, who works at UNGA Plus, Paddy, and former Meath footballer. And Shane was saying, put it in the corner, like a rugby kick into the touchline and put them in there and press them in there. Don't let it go out for a kick out. I think Morris kind of tried to do that, but he skewed it out for a kick out. So Cork get a kick out then. Meade foul. Kyle Hickey comes in and fouls. Brendan Griffiths playing an advantage and James Conlon comes in and is given a black card. Now, I was sure at the time that ball was going to be moved forward 50 metres. But I've heard from referees since, if a black card is given, it's one or the other. It's a black card or it's moved forward. Obviously, the bigger advantage with a couple of seconds
to go. There's no advantage in a black card for Cork.
Yeah. So, I don't know what you think it is. Obviously, the CCC made the decision to change the Hooter rule, revert it away after the David Clifford point last year at halftime, which was a bit daft. We've said this. We saw problems within the Down-Wexford game where Down held the ball for 3-odd minutes before they tried to go for a winner later on and it didn't happen for them. I don't know, Max. How are you feeling?
This is my take on it, right? No matter how the rules are, there's going to be teams trying to manipulate. And that's their job. That's the coach's job. It's the player's job. It's the manager's job in those big moments to come up with the right thing. I think we have a mindset at the moment of anything that happens, change the rules back again, change the rules. The rules have to go. Like, that's just constant. No one's ever going to be happy at the moment because we're kind of just in this constant state of change that. Change that. It's like every problem, just change it. And no one's going to be happy.
Obvious? What if it's obvious that it was better last year?
Well, was it better last year?
I'm asking
a team
you.
Could attack for 10 minutes if they wanted to. They could take, and we saw in the Donegal game, that all it takes for one fella to switch off and it's in the back net, there's no time limit.
Yeah, but a ball goes out of play there, it's done. Do you know, they're not holding the ball in advance of that.
No, I do agree. It probably was better last year. I'm only just arguing for the sake of it. But no, my point is that everyone wants to change everything.
I know. I'd be with you now.
When are we going to just say, these are the final batch and we're not fucking changing?
Okay. Yeah. The other thing, Paddy, and I got this chatting to Conor Doyle afterwards. Carlo only found out on Thursday night that they were playing with a hooter. At training. Like, the Division 3 and 4 games haven't had hooters in a lot of the grounds. And this is another thing that I think has undermined this rule from the very get-go. It hasn't been backed fully by those that needed to back it in HQ. And I just think that's so messy that there's different rules in the same competition. And the Carlo footballers laid on. Longford never led them in the game. Matthew Carey kicks a 68-minute equaliser. Carlo could not fashion an opportunity for a shot in that last play. And people are hammering them, but they're not used to playing with a hooter in their last seven games or even last year. So I don't know. It's a messy one.
I agree. I see John Cleary's comments afterwards.
Yeah, a bit John was raging. And I think rightly so.
Yeah, there's obviously an element of frustration there. Like, but on Jimmy's point, and I know it's easy for us to say, kind of sitting on the sidelines looking in, teams being cynical, street smart, whatever way you want to phrase it, that's just the way it is. But I totally agree with Jimmy's point. Whatever the rules are, teams will figure a way to game them as much as they possibly can. I have no issues with me doing what they need to do to win the game. I'd look at purely from a player's point of view, you just got to do what you got to do to win the match. So I have no issue with it. As I get it, as neutrals, it was a spectacle. I probably preferred last year, the most famous two-pointer, the Clifford shot in the All-Ireland final. It was actually a brilliant thing to watch, but again, I could see how people maybe have a bit of a problem with that. It's hard to please everyone, lads, but I wouldn't be begrudging. I know John Cleary is frustrated after it, but I wouldn't be begrudging what Meade were doing in the last play to win the game.
Yeah, there were shades of the desperate foul.
We may have done this ourselves.
2013 All-Ireland final, before the black card was introduced.
17 final.
Yeah, and Meade have made a very good habit of doing this at the end of games in the last couple of weeks. And maybe the way, James, you said Michael Murphy, you know, might pay for this later on in the year if referees are aware of it. Maybe referees will be aware of Meade's very smart fouling at the end of games
but
as well.
But the rule, is this the rule then with the Conlon incident? Is it they could have brought that up 50 metres for a shot for Cork?
I think
getting in the way of the ball or hand tripping after the free was given, he could have brought it up.
He could have, right? But I think in the moment and the way that it happened, and I haven't spoken to Brendan Griffin, so I don't know, but I think what John Cleary said is that Brendan Griffin said he was playing an advantage for the first foul, and then he gives a black card for the second foul, because it was like very clear, like rugby tackle black card. It was being played on. Do you know what I mean? Like, so he wasn't actually delaying him.
He did delay him.
He did. And was there another motion after it? I was obviously watching from the press box.
I think he delayed him after.
Yeah,
with a hand across the leg. Do you know how he kind of falls in between his legs? Like, oh no, a complete accident. Went really, it was. It was clever. Well, if it was brought
it can't
up, oh God, it would have been be carnage.
It can't be a black card and a 50-meter advancement. So there you go. It was a Stephen Sherlock territory, like, you know. So probably would have been extra time again. Fellas, anything else that you want to get into? I thought Desi Reynolds for Longford at the weekend. He kicked five absolutely glorious scores in the first half. It was brilliant. His brother Dan was superb throughout the league campaign for Mike Solon and Longford. And it wasn't clicking for him. He missed a couple of chances early doors and then kicks a couple of clutch doors in extra time. And in the end of the game, he fists one over in extra time and kicks a good one late on in the first half. But for Carlo, like Joe Murphy was talking afterwards, Paddy, about how proud he was that this was an all Carlo operation. Yeah. It was.
We spoke to him a couple of weeks ago. He had the same point on it. Refreshing. I think he's due to maybe talk to us today. I believe he has been celebrating with his players. Okay. might be chatting to him later today. But that is a refreshing angle. Just go.
I'll give you a wee exclusive so that you can put to Joe. He may have forgotten in all his passion about it being a full Carlo setup about Barry Hayes. A West Limerick man and former St. Senan's player who was coach selector with the Carlow team that defeated Longford in today's Allianz National Football League final. That was Matt O'Callaghan who tweeted that, and it came across our eyes after we were chatting to Joe. Now, I think the principle of what Joe was saying in terms of, you know, and he wasn't hammering, you know, the great managers who have gone in, like John O'Mahony or Paddy O'Shea or others who've gone into other places. But he was just saying, I think for this Carlow team, knowing what makes them tick, what makes the people tick, what gets them going, was so important, and it was a huge
like
point.
He took over last year, lads, coming into the week of a championship match against Meath. Not just great circumstances to get involved, but it's turned it around. And for Carlo, one to win silverware for the first time in like 80 years, I think people are saying. And then also just get up to Division 3. We know how competitive Division 3 and 4 are. And they started off like a house on fire, and then they lost a couple of games, but rescued it. And just again, the more so we're talking about Meath, what the important was for Donegal to kind of settle the score there in their head. For Carlo to go and win a championship match in Croke Park. Like, they're, it's brilliant. It's a brilliant story for Joe Murphy, all those players, because it's not most glamorous slog to be getting involved in and trying to get promoted now to Division 4. We know the Leinster Championship is going to be uber competitive, but Carlo and Longford probably are still not, they're not in, you know, Dublin, Meath, Louth, Kildare, slightly ahead of them.
Like, but the celebrations, like,
class. See the videos in the dressing room afterwards. That's what it's about, lads. If you can enjoy it along the way, why not? So that's the beauty of the leagues and the league final weekends in Croker. It's a cool thing to see.
Yeah. I think it was a Leinster title 80 years ago. They did win in 1994, they won an All-Ireland B, but it wasn't in Croke Park. It was their first win in Croke Park in 55 years since a random league game was moved to Croke Park in 1971. There was no reason for it. It was just an issue.
In bad weather. Bad weather that week back in the 70s, I think. Yeah.
James, anything else before we leave it there and we let Paddy get ready for his the rest of his busy day?
No, just the Oran Murdoch, I thought, kick some absolutely beautiful points.
I missed a lot of the Down Wexford game now because I was covering the Carlo.
Both feet, point kicking from the arc and inside. No, he took a penalty. You could have thrown your hat in it. He didn't connect with it. But his kicking, apart from that, was beautiful. It's a serious operator. Brilliant.
I think everyone has a bit of PTSD from penalties, don't they? After Craig.
Everyone along the way. Well, it's probably better than, no, well.
Daniel Guinness. Daniel Guinness, I thought, I saw most of the second half and extra time. Daniel Guinness was just class again. Very unlucky last year to miss out. One of the All-Star selectors was very, very strong in advocating for Daniel Guinness last year, and he was very unlucky. I think one or two other Down players were given a shout or two, and maybe if they'd all rode in behind Guinness, we could have had another All-Star nomination. But he just missed out last year, but he was brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some brilliant players coming through. And I slowly we're getting into that scene of the skills are being rewarded more and more, and we're going to see more skillful players. Like, even a couple of years ago, Sherlock wouldn't
crowded out
those shots. Like, you've been crowded out, yeah. Like, I'm glad we're seeing these rewards. And Langan's shot in the first half where he doubles back and kicks a two-pointer standing still is, like, the talent levels that we're finally seeing is just savage.
Yeah. I think John Hegarty is maybe demanding a bit more respect for the Wexford footballers, or looking for a bit more of it. They weren't really given much of a hope going in. It was kind of a done deal. Then we're going to do it. Poor Hughes was one of the best footballers in the field, kicking 5 points as well for Wexford. It was brilliant to see. Lads, next week we're going to be back and we're going to be building up to the first weekend of Championship. There's a clatter of games across Munster, across Connacht, in New York and London, and also in Ulster. We've got Armagh against Tyrone the following weekend. So it's an All-Hurling weekend this weekend. We've got they're not happy. The two big league finals, Division 1A and 1B, are in the Gaelic grounds. So I'll be covering that one for Off the Ball. We'll be back next Monday. So good work, lads. Thanks for
Easter Monday. Are we recording on Easter Monday?
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure something out.
We might do it later in the week to build up to the championship. We might do it a little later, a bit of a preview show, maybe Tuesday or Wednesday.
Have a great week, lads.
Talk to you soon.